Guys, I have a question for you. It's a Thanksgiving question.
Okay.
It's actually not that unusual. I am curious what your, like, ideal Thanksgiving plate looks like.
Well, you gotta have an Angus beef hamburger on it.
Wait, what?
Angus beef. It's got to be Angus beef, too. Don't come
but
in
a
here
hamburger?
With that. Yes, an Angus beef hamburger, and then a big pile of crinkle-cut French fries.
Yeah.
And stuffing.
Griffin insists on only eating Thanksgiving at Fuddruckers, so that is one thing.
Hey, listen, don't knock it till you try it, baby. Yeah,
the Fuddruckers stuffing is just mushed up buns and ketchup packets, and it is good.
They call it Rucky stuff.
I love that Rucky stuff.
Me too.
Turkey, sweet potatoes with pecan crust, not marshmallows. If it's marshmallows, throw it in the garbage. Stuffing. Obviously, a delicious roll, and then a dollop of, I like mashed parsnips or roast vegetables, some sort of thing like that, and that's a perfect plate for me, for starters. And then the next plate two is where things get really nasty.
Yeah.
Then it's not about appearances anymore. Mm. Then it's about, like, what am I going in hard on, deep in the paint, to, like, really take myself to the limit. That's where I'm at. Maybe a bit of Ritz tort on that second round if I'm feeling spicy. Otherwise, I'll save that for after the big game.
For me, Thanksgiving, when I think of, like, Thanksgiving meals, the immediate word that jumps to mind is indigestion.
Uh-huh.
So I try to opt for like a single piece of dried chicken, maybe some water.
That's so important. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Well, this is weird to me. I mean, one, because that just sounds awful. But two, none of you... I'm being dead serious here. None of you do pickle surprise?
Okay, I have been to a Chris Plant Thanksgiving before. This is not a goof or a gag. No, it's not a goof or a gag. It's real. It's the real deal, Holyfield.
I mean, can we talk about the rebrand before we even dive into what that is? Because
there is some serious reclaiming of the lexicon here. Tell me about your surprise.
Pickle surprise, I do think this is a thing. I think that we're going to have a lot of people tweeting at us being like, Plant, you did it again. You were right. And everybody else was wrong.
You know that hashtag, Plant, you were right again?
Yeah.
That everybody's always bringing out.
Pickle surprise is where you take like a deli meat, usually like a bologna or something like that. And then you lay it out flat on the cutting table. The cutting board.
The cutting, the table.
Cutting pickle surprises. You lay it out flat. You smear some cream cheese on it, like a good helping of cream cheese. Cover that entire top of that meat with cream cheese.
And now you're thinking it couldn't possibly get worse than that, could it?
Well, you got to add the pickle. You lay the pickle in it. And then you wrap, like, you lay the pickle on one end, and then you, like, wrap it up like a burrito almost, right?
Yeah, sure.
Then you cut it into, like, bite-sized bites, like it was going to be given out on Halloween. And then you put toothpicks in each bite so people can eat it whenever they want throughout
the
day.
So I do have a question, and that is, where does the surprise come in? Because it kind of seems like everything's sort of right there in front of you.
Yeah, it sounds like an ingredient.
I think the surprise is that it's being served to you.
Okay. Could we maybe, and this is, by the way, the longest intro we've ever done, but now I'm invested in pickle surprise.
Sure.
Could you make it so that there's not a pickle in each one? And there's only a pickle in, like, every one and five.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Get, like, a birdie box.
It's like
experience.
A king cake.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Oh, that's good. What if everyone has an additional surprise inside the pickle, and it's a little bit of Testament? New Testament's been rolled up, and you can get a little bit of scripture.
I like that.
After you
I got Genesis.
A little bit of scripture in there. Ooh, Genesis. Delicious. The most delicious surprise.
Good. Did you not try one when you came over to our house?
Well, here's how it went. You said you should really try this. And I said,
I remember what
it?
Happened. Yeah.
And I said, I don't want that.
No,
I don't want to eat that.
What Griffin actually said was, oh, my wife is going into labor, and I need to leave immediately.
Good excuse.
is a good excuse, actually. Yeah, a good reason to bail.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I do know the best game of, yeah.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I played a bunch of video games this week, and I'm excited to tell you about them.
Yeah.
My name is Russ Frostick, and I was expecting more enthusiasm from Griffin about a Pokemon game.
Yeah, so Griffin, yeah.
Yeah. We are going to be talking about the Pokemon Diamond and Silver.
Oh, Pearl. My God.
Throw it to me, buddy.
I'm ready for it.
Pokemon Diamond and Pearl.
Shining Pearl and Brilliant Diamond.
That wasn't in the rundown, and obviously I wasn't going to know it.
Here's what it is.
You should have known that.
Yeah, yeah, it's fair.
Plant, what are these games?
They are a remake of the 2007 in America, 2006 in Japan, I believe, Pokemon games, yes. Pokemon Diamond and Pearl for the Nintendo DS. These are the ones that added internet play, so they got those kids online. The remake is basically the same game in a lot of ways, but it's got those like 3D modern chibi aesthetic visuals. Chibi, for people who are not familiar with the word, how would you describe chibi, Griffin?
Big head, cute little bodies.
Yeah, that sounds right.
As impossible as it is to believe, we will have more to say about this product. It's going to come right after this brief break. Okay, Griffin.
Yeah.
Tell me all your thoughts on Mon, because I really want to hear them.
Yeah. Okay. I
want to eat this apple.
Okay.
So just thanks.
Yeah, if you can mute definitely that.
Please, please.
The apple fully, I'm begging you. Okay, so Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl.
Just rolls right off the tongue.
It does not, so we're going to just call them Diamond and Pearl, and you all have to just use the mind power that you have to focus on the fact that we're not talking about 14-year-old OG versions of these games, but in fact, the ones that came out last week. I think our audience is capable of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I try it, I get chastised.
Yeah, I know. The apple was definitely present in the cut there. Yep. It had a little bit too much sauce in the mix.
It was a honey crisp.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Russ.
Is he right?
It was a honey
crisp. Holy shit. Pokemon Diamond and Pearl, as Chris alluded to, were the first of the Nintendo DS Pokemon games. The Nintendo DS was capable of getting on internet in a way that Game Boy and Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance never were. Duh. What else did they add to the series? I mean, they added some like cute sort of side questy stuff that every Pokemon game kind of tosses into the mix.
And they added like 100 Pokemon.
And added like 100 Pokemon. I think the final count at the end of Gen 4, which is what Diamond and Pearl, and then it's like tertiary follow-up Platinum, had in the roster. And I believe that is what you can collect in these new remakes. They did not add additional Pokemon from every, the many following generations that came after that. One big feature it added was called the Underground, which was like a sort of sub-world that you could dig down into and walk around collecting items and building a secret base and digging in the walls for resources. And that was the game. I want to do a quick table setter because I had a realization while playing through this game, and I believe we have hinted at the fact that I did not enjoy it really very much at all, is that this franchise has been around since, what, 96, I
believe? I think it was 96, yeah.
And it's so funny that they refer to, like, each of the batches of games, right? Each of the pair of games that release at the same time, and then usually the tertiary follow-up, like Yellow for Gen 1 or Crystal for Gen 2, are referred to as generations. Because I've realized that because the series has been around for so long and has had such sort of staying power, every like generation of human beings that play this game have a different jumping on point, right?
Mm.
So when these games came out, I was like starting to hit the point where I just like wasn't really into Pokemon games as much anymore.
What do you mean when Diamond and Pearl came out?
When Diamond and Pearl came out in 2007, like I was 20 years old, I was in college, sure. I had a job, and also like straight up, I was pretty burnt out on Pokemon because I'd played the shit out of the prior three generations worth of games.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the moment because you were pretty damn obsessed about the one that came out 2 years ago. So I'm just very curious what happened.
It has caught me back, right? I can talk about Sword and Shield. Later on, but like this was my realization, is that there are lots of people. I liked Diamond and Pearl. I played it, but I didn't get like super duper into it. A lot of the DS generation of games, like, I just didn't get really into. But for younger folks, like, those are the games where they cut their teeth, right? There are lots of people out there who Diamond and Pearl were their first Pokemon game, and so receiving what Nintendo has called a extremely faithful, completely. Anytime you hear the word super faithful remake of a game that is very old, it means that there's not going to be anything new. And that should be a big red flag, because that is the case with Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl. Like, there are no Pokemon past Gen 4.
Man, I thought you were about to say there's no Pokemon. I was on the edge of my seat.
Which is a serious problem for Diamond and Pearl, because Diamond and Pearl famously had like a really imbalanced roster. Like, there were only a handful of fire-type Pokemon. So if you didn't choose the fire-type starter, like, you would kind of be up shit creek and not really have a fire-type Pokemon that you could, like, call your own for a good long time.
I wanted the penguin.
My son and I have been playing it together, and he went with Turtwig. And I was like, are you sure, my man? Are you sure, my dude? A few of the, like, features have been sort of upgraded, right? I think the best thing about the game is that the underground feature, which was Diamond and Pearl's sort of, like, big, you know, new thing, has been upgraded into something called the Grand Underground, which is just enormous now. And it has these areas where now you can catch different sets of Pokemon underground that you can kind of customize with how you decorate your secret base with, like, different statues that you find. It's a neat system, and then you can play it, like, online with other people and just, like, get wild up in the underground. It fixes a little bit the type stuff, because you can, like, craft a fire-type, hideaway that you can go in and you know, patch up the holes in your team a little bit more, yeah. Right? That's to me, that is, like, the best improvement here.
You can also, I would say, you can walk diagonal. I don't think you could do that in the original.
It's huge. It's so huge.
It actually, like, no joke, you used to, you know, in most of the early Pokemon games, obviously you just walked in all, you know, the four directions, north, south, yeah, east, west, whatever. That was all you could do. Being able to move, like, an actual, like, character around, yes, actually does make a big difference for me. Like,
sure,
comfort of the world. It doesn't really change the gameplay that much, but it makes it nicer to play. I also want to say, like,
no, but I mean, it is thrilling. I remember the first time I walked diagonally.
That's what I'm saying. I also want to say, I really like the art style of the overworld. I wish it's
cute,
carried over into battles, because the battles more or less look like Sword and Shield battles. Like, they use the same art. But the overworld art is, like, great. It is a perfect kind of modernization of that era, but, like, making it 3D to the point where, like, it feels very referential without being the exact same, like, copy sprites. It's like a 3DI's version of what the sprite art was, and I think it's great.
I don't want to spend a whole bunch of time on this game, because it quite literally is just the old game,
right,
but slightly better. But there was a question that we had that I think might be more useful for our listeners, unless anybody has anything that they want to share before you wrap up.
I just wanted to clarify something with Griffin. You weren't super into this one originally. Did you play all of it?
Yeah, I beat it. I am beholden to the franchise. I will say this. I am not going to beat this one. I do not want to play it anymore. Before we hop off the game, they have done remakes of Pokemon games a few times now, right? All the way back to Game Boy Advance, they released Fire Red and Leaf Green, which were the first two games in the whole series that, you know, got the Game Boy Advance glow up, but they also added, like, a whole nother, like, adventure after you finish the game that was not in the original one.
Let's Go Pokemon, which just came out.
Let's Go. Those games were also another recreation, but obviously super different in a way a lot of people didn't like. But as a dad of, like, a young kid who was into Pokemon, was basically the target audience for that, It was different, right? It was wildly different. My favorite games in the whole series were Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver for the DS, which were remakes of Silver and Gold, which are still my favorite ones of all time. They added Pokemon from later generations. They still had like the post game where you went back and basically played Red and Blue again with your current team. Even Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire in the 3DS like added a bunch of stuff. It had content from Pokemon Emerald, which was their like tertiary thing. This game doesn't do any of that.
Well, there's
it
a
doesn't
reason.
Include, and it doesn't include any of the stuff from like Platinum, which has like, but Platinum was, I think, a much better game than yeah. Pearl and Diamond. But there's just none of that stuff in. And the defense against all that stuff is, well, yeah, it's a super faithful recreation.
Well,
but you can't like, it making something faithful to a game that came out like 14 years ago without sort of introducing the, incorporating the stuff that has bettered this franchise since then and people kind of expect at this point is just a bad thing.
Well, I think this is what happens when you listen to your most hardcore fans, right? Like that, I think that's yeah. the thing here. I mean, we'll probably mention it when we talk about Pokemon Sword and Shield in a second, but the yeah. very, very hardcore Pokemon fans believe that like the series should kind of go back to how it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And here is Nintendo doing just that. What's like silly about it though is they did that, but then like did the chibi aesthetic, which is in the 2D game too.
Yep. More or less, yeah.
More or less, but is unsurprisingly upsetting, you know, this hardcore fans. Pokemon fans, the most hardcore ones, I have no idea truly what they want. It's just like,
I mean, any
well, it's
fan
not
base.
One thing. I just covered, right? Like, it's we're talking about not one conglomerate fan base. Like,
right.
It is, at this point, it is several generations of people playing these games all wanting different stuff from them.
And different hardcore generations within each of those.
Right. It's incredibly fractured, right?
Yeah.
So, like, Sword and Shield were certainly flawed games, right? They had their fair share of issues. But they were so, they reinvented a lot of the stuff about the franchise in really bold ways. And it had like, you know, performance issues definitely and some pacing issues and not all of the stuff they added worked good. But the stuff that did, I thought was pretty cool and was enough to keep me, I fucking caught them all, right? Like I was really, really into those games in a way that I hadn't been in a long time, right?
Yeah.
And I feel the same way about X and Y. Those are the games that really pulled me back in after I kind of fell off on the DS generation. Pokemon is like the worst franchise they could have done this for because it is, the complaint is leveraged against it so much that like, it's just the same old shit. And in this remake, like they embrace that in a way that is, I could not hang with. It was so not enjoyable to play.
Can I just have like 30 seconds? Because I did play some of this, and I don't want that time to just be like wasted when I have to account for it with St. Peter and shit. Like, it's my opinion is worth next to nothing unless you are somebody who like casually theoretically enjoys the idea of Pokemon and maybe has like kids that would be into Pokemon as well. I much more enjoyed the brief time I spent with Sword and Shield. I thought that it was like much more interesting and this felt like very rote and kind of boring and like very reminiscent of the limited Pokemon I played as a youth. If you're looking for a place to like get on board with it, I don't feel like this is
no way.
Yeah, so
I would very much start with
that
Sword
gets
and
to the big question I have for y'all. And this is separate from the listener mail, which we'll get to in a minute. But we had a question here from William and they said, I just got my first Switch. The last Nintendo device I owned was the Game Boy Color, translucent purple, of course. And the last Pokemon game I played was Gold. Not sure if I should even bother with the series now. What should I do? Sword and Shield, Diamond and Pearl remakes, wait for... Is it called Arceus? Is that right, Griffin?
I don't know how that
okay.
name is.
Should I abstain?
I don't know that gentleman.
Yeah. And well, the thing that I think we can use this as a jumping off point is there are actually a lot of Pokemon games, both
sure.
mainline and non-mainline, on the Switch. You know, which of these do y'all recommend? Who do you think, like, different... What are the kind of different entry points for different types of people?
I'm going to guess this is an older person because they owned a Game Boy Color. And I think for someone that has been out of the loop of Pokemon for a very long time, this is going to be a weird comment, but stick with it. I think Pokemon Snap might be the way to go. The new Pokemon Snap that they released, which they've continued to support like post-release with new content, stuff like that, is like a kind of a great introduction to the world of Pokemon, in addition to like the new mons that have been added and stuff like that, without having like a ton of the very slow build-up cruft that you kind of have to power through to get to the actual game of Pokemon.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I am, over time, I've been more and more pro Pokemon Snap than I was at the initial launch.
Yeah, but if you want to, like, I don't know, it's such a departure.
I mean, it's not from, normal Pokemon. Right. Like, it's, you're taking photos, so that's worth considering.
It is fun, though.
It is a fun game, sure. Right. I mean, my two recommendations is, if you are a younger person or you have kids and you are looking to introduce them to the thing, you cannot do better than Let's Go Pikachu or Let's Go Eevee, because it, like, eases in a new player in a way that might sort of put familiar, you know, players with the franchise to sleep. I don't know that I would have gotten as into those games as I did if I hadn't played through, you know, literally all of it with Henry. But if not that, I don't know, man. I mean, Pokemon Sword and Shield definitely adds a lot of stuff on top of the formula, but it is also, in my opinion, like the most enjoyable Pokemon game on the Switch.
I wanted to mention one thing. While I was playing this, all I can think was, like, I think I would maybe like and or love this a lot more if I could just, like, blaze through so much of the text.
Fast
like,
forward.
I turned off battle animations and I put the speed to, like, highest on the text speed. Yeah. And, like, blazing through all that stuff, like, I just want to, like, get through battles quickly and level up Pokemon, stuff like that. I don't, you know, I'm not in it for the story.
Right,
that said, exactly. I realize these are games that are not for me, so I get why that is in there, but it is, at this point, like, I've read the phrase, do you want to switch your Pokemon because a new Pokemon is coming out, about 10,000 times in my life. At this point,
let me do it, yeah.
Let me just do it.
I'm going to throw in one other game here. Pokemon Unite, for people, it's like their riff on MOBAs, but you can dunk in it. And
yeah.
Pokemon that dunk, that's a pretty good case to get back into Pokemon. I think the only thing that I would say people should avoid, if you are, like, just coming back to Pokemon, Pokken Tournament, I don't think is going to be your entry point. Mystery Dungeon, yeah. There are better versions of this game that are not Pokemon on the Switch, frankly. I don't know if any of you played Quest or Cafe Remix.
No, I think
I'm big into Cafe, but that's again because of my 4-year-old. I just want to say if you have a 3DS, you have access to every Pokemon game that came out up to the Switch, right? Because you can get Virtual Console versions of Red and Blue. You can play Heart Gold, Soul Silver. Because you can play DS games on a 3DS. You got the remakes of Ruby and Sapphire. Yeah, you can play, you know, the original DS, Diamond and Pearl. Like, you can play everything on that. You can play Black 2 and White 2, which are bonkers games that are kind of standouts for me. So, yeah, just keep that in mind. I also, you win out on the best Pokemon games of Gold and Silver. So, you know, there's a little feather in your cap there.
Okay, well, Chris, did you want to hit the was there any other questions about Pokemon specifically you wanted to address before?
No, I think we should get ready for that back half, because we're going to open up that listener mailbag, and it's going to be a blast.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, well, let's go, and we'll be right back right after this.
I've prepared the listener mailbag. It is deep today. Before we start, just want to say, hey, everybody who listens to the show, thanks. It's, you
Thank
know-
Thank you.
The day after Thanksgiving, and I hope that you had a nice time, even though the holidays can sometimes be tough, but we appreciate you, because we really would not do the show at all if not for
that
you.
That wouldn't make any sense.
It would not.
We have empirical evidence to that fact that we would not do this.
We try desperately not to make this show.
Okay, here we go. Let's start with a question from Shelby. I feel like I've gotten very stuck in my ways as far as game genres are concerned, and I want to expand my horizons. What was the last game you played and enjoyed from a genre you're not normally into? This was Hades for me, Shelby says. Turns out roguelikes can be good, actually.
I will answer this and say mine was probably Final Fantasy VII Remake. As people who listen to this show know, I am very not pro JRPGs, largely speaking. And that totally grabbed me. I thought it was phenomenal, and I totally love that game.
Huh. This may not count, but I've gotten really, really into Sudoku lately. There's so many good Sudoku games out there, guys.
Yeah, man.
There's.
Tell me all about them.
You want to hear all about the Sudokus that I like?
Tell me.
No. I can't remember. There's a game called Good Sudoku.
Wait, are you joking or no?
No, I'm not joking. Why would I fucking joke about something like this?
Okay, I didn't realize there were that many variants on Sudoku, which tends to be...
I mean, Good Sudoku
is it's a Zach Gage game, and it's really good, and you should get it. I've also been playing a game called Sumaddle, S-U-M-A-D-D-L-E, on iOS, and it's kind of a Picross Sudoku. Well, not really Picross. It's like Sudoku with different rules, and I'm very into that. Yeah, I find that my tastes are going in a sort of a...
Grandpa direction?
Yeah, more of a grandpa direction. I'm very into... it was that fucking Clubhouse Games Switch version that turned me into a grandpa, because I was like, you know what? I fucking love backgammon.
Griffin, how do you feel about hot water and lemon?
I mean, if the rains are coming on and you feel a you feel that familiar ache, it helps soothe your humors.
You know, I would recommend for these, this is why I like games that sort of like fuse two genres that are otherwise sort of like non-related, because it seems to give you sort of like a nice high level, you know, surface version of it while giving you something else that you may be more familiar with. I talked about Moonlighter last week, which is sort of like that, where it's like an action roguelike type thing that's mixed with like a shop simulator, which is not something I would normally play. Along the lines of what Griffin just mentioned, though, I mentioned this game years ago, but I continue to return to it pretty frequently on my iPhone, and that's Cribbage with Grandpa. It's literally like you build your own grandpa, and you name your grandpa, and you give him a personality and a look and a background, and then he teaches you how to play cribbage, and then you like play cribbage with your grandpa. And he, like, cheers you on when you do a good job.
Unless you make a mean grandpa.
Unless you make a mean, cruel grandpa. No, he's a nice grandpa. And he will, like, give you hints if you get stuck. And he keeps tally of, like, who's won and who's lost and stuff. and if you don't play for a while, he falls asleep. It's great. It's great. It's called Cribbage with Grandpa. And I love that, like, approachable, like, assume you know nothing about a game, and like, here's how we're going to like slowly ease you into it. I really dig
that. I think I've just started ignoring genres this year after realizing that I have no idea what I actually like, because I thought I liked Metroidvanias, but now I don't know.
Wait, Metroid Dread? No, before this year you thought you didn't like Metroidvanias.
No, I knew I didn't like Metroid, but I thought I liked Metroidvanias.
And now you don't?
What a wild distinction to make.
I know.
Telling me that Metroid Dread turned, which you didn't, the franchise you thought you didn't like, turned you off of the genre, which you thought you didn't like?
No, it was actually the opposite. I really liked Metroid Dread, but it didn't click with me like the way it does with everybody else. Where I was like, I admire this game. Like, this is a really good game in a genre maybe that I guess isn't actually much for me. On the flip side, I didn't think I like, I don't know, PC type of games, but then this year I don't like deck building games stuff. You know, I don't like where I have to think, but then Inscription and Wildermyth and Flight Simulator have been like some of my favorite stuff of the past couple of years, so I don't know, maybe I just like certain games and I genre.
You don't subscribe to labels. It's just
I'm trying to say is that, speaking of, while I'm being pretentious, I have a question here from Matt. Since this is a video game book club, what are your favorite books based on or about video? No, I'm adding this because I want to shout out one book that is actually good, and then we can move on. It's a good. I swear it's a good book, and I think Justin will like this. Justin, have you seen The Making of Prince of Persia by Jordan Mechner? So
no.
Is it a book? He wrote a book. The creator of the original Prince of Persia wrote a book, and is his diary from while he was making it. So like, tons of images and like moment to moment recount, like here is how I am making this game. It's really, really, really cool. And if you are someone who's interested in, like, I don't know, just the very human and kind of mundane process of making a game, it is such a cool read and avoids, like, I have plenty of, you know, very academic books that Fresh does not want me to talk about on my bookshelves. This is not one of them. It's also not one of those kind of, you know, coffee table books, which are fun, but are like, here's 50 games that you should play. It really threads the needle on that sweet spot. So,
all kidding aside, I do actually have a recommendation for this as well.
Do you?
Sometimes I read books. Spoiler alert. If you have any interest whatsoever in making games yourself,
you're about to say the exact book.
Might I suggest reading Press Reset, which is Jason Schreier's latest book. No book that I have read has convinced me more that I made the right decision in not going into game development. I found it.
Promise me he does not financially benefit for this purchase. That's the one thing I need to know, that I'm not lining Jason Schreier's pockets.
I am assured that he only makes a very small percentage of every purchase.
Oh, okay, good.
It basically goes into the backstory of a variety of different development cycles for games like Bioshock Infinite and a number of other titles that Kurt Schilling Studio, what was that game? Reckoning?
Oh, yeah. Christ. Oh, shit.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic. If you haven't read it, like, it is. It's nobody does Jason Schreier like Jason Schreier does. This is a whole Jason Schreier-ass book.
So it's very good. And again, if you or maybe someone in your life has a dream of making video games, force them to read this book.
Yeah.
And then see how they feel after that.
I want to recommend Boss Fight Books has a bunch of really great sort of short paperbacks about, a lot of them are like, you know, folks in the industry who are fans of a certain game, who are like just writing pretty big investigative books about it, like the creation of Bible Adventures for the NES. But the one I'd recommend is Spelunky, which is written by Derek Yu, and it's all about the creation of that game. It is a quick, very fun read, and if you are familiar with the game at all, it like really gets into detail about how the like world creating like randomizer stuff works. And I think there's other books that are sort of autobiographical like that, but I loved the Spelunky book.
I can't choose, so I'm gonna do real quick three. Like two are sort of foundational. They're all foundational, I guess. If you haven't read them, Chris Kohler's Power Up.
Oh yeah,
is like kind of essential reading, I feel like, at this
point. Kind of hard to find.
Harder to find. Ralph Koster's Theory of Fun is, like, really is the book that I think sort of, like, shaped the way that I thought about games and fun more than, like, literally anything else I've ever encountered. And Masters of Doom, the book about id Software and the creation of those games, is fantastic. The audiobook read by Will Wheaton is very excellent too. But those are like the three that sort of like instantly pop into my head.
Yeah, I can't believe Masters of Doom hasn't been turned into a TV show yet. I know Halt and Catch Fire is.
I thought Masters of Doom, I feel like it got licensed.
I thought so
it must too. Have.
Right? Didn't it get optioned?
It's so primed for it. Anyway, I want to keep us moving. A question from Brianna. I just got a Series S. It's my first time ever owning an Xbox, so do you have any recommendations from Game Pass or the store for someone new to the ecosystem? Let's just stick on Game Pass with this, because...
Yeah, I talked about it in a previous episode, but unpacking is tremendous, really, really good. I also really like, if you like racing games, Lonely Mountains Downhill is also like fantastic. It's just like a bike game, but played from an isometric perspective. Really cool, like lo-fi graphics, like low poly style. Really like those two.
I mean, so much of what we've talked about in the show, from like Carrion to, I mean,
oh yeah, Carrion,
gobs of stuff. Donut County, which is not my favorite game, but a game I know a lot of people loved and is a good just entry point. But also,
it's also really great for kids, by the way.
Yeah, for sure.
But my 7-year-old's obsessed.
Also, Dragon Quest XI S. Echoes Hell of an Elusive Age, Definitive Edition, is on Game Pass, and...
Don't you laugh, that game beats ass.
Yeah.
That's a really good game.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so much on here.
Banjo-Tooie!
Banjo-Tooie. Bejeweled 3. Yeah, I think
Blinks the fucking time sweeper. Sweep that time up, Blinks. You go ahead, boy.
Oh,
I love that dude. Oh, Sorry, hold on, wait. Did Blinks get canceled?
Yeah, that's why we're all curiously silent during your great Blinks riff.
It wasn't a riff, it was a full-throated endorsement of Blinks. The man can do no wrong, unless
he's a cat, actually.
Okay, guys, this has gotten a little serious over here on my end. As the Googling has continued here, Masters of Doom, like, had a cast. There was a Polygon story about it in 2019, written by Michael McWhorter. Like, it has a cast. What happened
Maybe
to this thing,
just
guys?
Like a COVID delay? Did it not go into shooting? I thought it was like an FX.
I don't know. I don't have a video game website. Why don't you motherfuckers find
That's
out?
A good point.
Don't find out for me.
It's a holiday. Okay, one last question. This one's from Andrew. If you could only play one game console for the rest of your life, but you had access to that console's entire game library, which console would you pick?
PC.
Oh.
Yeah, PC feels like cheating.
Yeah. PC's not a console.
I feel like that's cheating.
PC's cheating.
Not a console. Yeah.
Okay, do we recognize virtual libraries?
Like
the
Wii's virtual
console.
Backwards
compatible
yes.
libraries? That seems like cheating.
It does a little bit.
Okay, yeah. Just stuff that was released purposely.
Because I can play every, like, you know.
Every Xbox game ever released or something.
It puts the original PS3 at an unfair advantage, right?
Is that what you were you tempted to say the original PS3?
No, but you can play all the PS2 and PS1
but
games.
But I don't care as much about those games.
Okay, let's make it to games
I think
that were released, they were either designed for or ported
yes.
purposely to that console.
Okay.
I mean, no joke, maybe it might be Switch.
I think it's Switch
for me. It's got so much shit on it. It has so many of those ports and so many like good-ass games. That I feel like it could sufficiently keep me entertained for the rest of my days.
And it's portable, so yeah. Like we're in the apocalypse, I'm assuming, and this is the only console I can get a hold of.
This is our Twilight Zone Burgess Meredith.
Yeah, I'm locked in a safe, and this is all I have, so perfect. Piece of cake. And then my glasses break, and it's a dreck.
Oh, yeah.
My glasses. I think Switch is almost cheating. It's not cheating. It's almost cheating, because... The idea of the Switch, where I feel like every developer is, hey, you know what? We have this game lying around that's been on PC for a while. Let's just bring it to Switch because people want it there because it's portable.
Death's Door just came out. I might give that one a second
pass. Wait,
did
it really?
On Switch.
Ooh. Yep.
And it runs okay?
I mean, I assume so. I hope. I haven't played it, but it's like...
It's the Switch.
It's gotten pretty good reviews. I assume it's just like...
Okay, I'm excited about that. Yeah, I think that's like the kind of easy answer. I mean, Dreamcast has a special place in my heart, but I have to be honest with myself that I would run out of...
That there was only like 15 games that ever came out on Dreamcast?
No, they're like a gajillion, and you could play them all on your Dreamcast even when the Dreamcast was out because piracy was rampant for that system.
That is true, yeah.
I do want to mention real quick, just this recently to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Xbox, Xbox released like a museum website thing where you could like go back and look at your stats. And it's fascinating to me to see the 4-year period from like when the Switch launched to basically when the Series X launched, where I more or less did not touch my Xbox for that entire period of time. And then it like spikes again. Once the Series X came out and I started playing Game Pass way more. Very interesting.
Okay, is it time for honorable mentions?
Yeah.
Okay. Justin, do you have anything that you want to share with us? Have you been picking anything else?
You recommended the... Unsighted? Called?
Yeah.
Unsighted. That's really good. I've really been enjoying that one a lot, actually, if I have free time. When I'm not fucking obsessed with Pokemon, I really have been enjoying that. I feel like we need to talk about that more at length to give it its due, but it's like a isometric sort of Zelda-ish with like better, like more, not better, but like more complex combat with like the weapon combinations and stuff. And then there's also some like really interesting narrative hook of... Everyone in the game is an automaton who has a limited number of hours left to live because sort of like this world's power source has been depleted and you're trying to like save everybody like before they can die. It's pretty wild. I've been enjoying it, the limited amount of upgrades.
I think so we will be blowing it out a bit more in resties because Plan and I both played a ton. So
but if you want also to know be, more, I think we'll be bringing that into the game of the year conversation, Justin. So I think we'll all be discussing it more.
Also, I got into after Inscription sort of lit up my senses in the words of John Denver. I have been moving on to some of the other games from Daniel Mullen's games. I just started on Pony Island, which, like, I'll say this, if you like Inscription, you're going to like Pony Island. It's pushing a lot of the same buttons, and it's not as polished, I think, as Inscription, but, like, it's pretty
and it's just a game about, like, a Pony Island, right?
It's just a game about a Pony Island.
Cool.
Yes. There's nothing about the devil in it at all. Guaranteed. The devil is not even in it much. That's an official stamp of approval. Justin Seal quality, limited amounts of the devil.
I wanted to ask the room, has anyone else been playing more of Forza Horizon 5? Yes.
It's so good.
I gotta be real. Griffin and Justin, I know y'all are like, racing games, meh. I get it. I am with you. We were talking about genres that I don't normally get into. This is another one. This is the first racing game that I've gotten heavily into since Burnout Paradise came out like 8 fucking years ago. It just is very arcadey and constantly has like stuff that I'm unlocking, and it's insanely gorgeous. And I don't know, I'm like very smitten by it in a way that I haven't been with a racing game in a very long time. So I would strongly, strongly recommend it. And it's available for everyone on Game Pass. It's kind of like the biggest Xbox game ever in terms of player count because it's on Game Pass. So it's pretty wild. And
it's more like open world Mario Kart or like open world game where you just happen to be a car.
That's fun. I think that's fair. And, also, and you can kind of just play, like if you like street racing, you could just do street racing. If you like just doing big jumps, you could just do big jumps. It's very sort of tailored to your preference.
Fresh. Burnout Paradise came out 13 years ago.
Oh my God, I'm fucking a million years old.
Excuse me, can you pan back to me for a second? Can you turn the camera back towards me? Halo!
I know that Halo, I know. Oh, you're talking about Halo. You've been playing the new Halo.
God, guys, it's so good.
Yeah.
Hey, it's so good. And the unlockables in it are really interesting because they have like challenges for you to do, which are like kind of motivating.
You're talking about Halo like, Infinite also, multiplayer, just to be like really clear,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. There's challenges that are like, you know, blow up an enemy warthog or, you know, kill 5 people with a assault rifle, whatever. And those are like you earn experience points, which you can use to do like cosmetics. But the you don't get rewards for like winning.
Yeah.
And the only reason to keep playing is just because, get this, it's very fun.
Whoa.
And, yeah, I know. You don't have to just be unlocking stuff all the time. I don't even care if I unlock stuff because I enjoyed the game. And can I say, I don't know what it is, but I'm doing a good job.
Oh, like, wow.
It's very surreal for me. And I know it's just because it's early or whatever, but like yesterday I had 16 kills and 2 deaths.
Oh my gosh.
Match. I was like the number one scorer. It was fantastic. And no, there weren't bots in there. Shut up. No, it's really, really, I'm shocked. Honestly, shocked.
I think it's because it's free to play. So the audience is like way bigger than it normally would be. And also, yeah, that it's early, but also they've been like making matchmaking systems for Halo games for 20 years at this point. So at this point, it's kind of dialed in. So you should be playing against people that more or less are near your skill level.
Yeah, the balance on it feels so good right
now. I played yesterday because there's an event they just launched with like you can unlock like samurai armor or whatever. But the event is there's a new mode called Fiesta where every time you die, it's just deathmatch. But every time you die, you get thrown a totally random loadout. And I was blown away by how many weapons are in this game. There are like 16 different weapons. There's like the, you know, normal like long range laser gun. There's like a spike shooter thing that explodes people. There's like a SMG electricity gun. Like I was just like, wow, there's another weapon I have never seen before. And I think the mode is very smart because it just like lets you dick around and it's not a big deal if you screw up.
It also like so many of the weapons in this game feel, especially like the alien weapons, and it's hard to contextualize those, right? Because we haven't played the single player sure. thing yet. So like I don't know exactly where these weapons are from, but like so many of them feel like, oh, are you sure you want to give me this? Like it feels like I'm probably gonna be too powerful with this. Like just launching rows of plasma at people that like sweep through a room and blow everyone apart. And a lot of the games feel like a lot of the weapons yeah. feel like that, which is very, very neat. And it's got a grappling hook. I mean, fuck.
I'm very excited for the campaign.
Griffin,
have you played it?
I haven't dipped into it yet. No.
Oh my God. It's great. It's genuinely bringing me back to like the last time I truly enjoyed Halo, which would probably be Halo 3.
It's on Steam as well. If you don't want to do Windows Store.
And I don't. It is novel. The idea of playing a shooter without the intent of collecting 100, you know, etheric spirals to move on to the next quest step that would allow me to unlock yeah. like iteratively better, you know, cape or something like that is it does seem fun to me. It does seem like the kind of thing that once I do play it and enjoy it, I would not go back to the other thing maybe.
And the other thing is like almost all the matches I've played have been like close. It's really exciting to be playing a lot like 4-on-4 and you feel like my contribution like matters. Like I'm I could put us over the top by playing a little yeah. smarter. It's very cool.
I love that Russ filled in my part for me, which was helpful because I've been talking to Russ about this game and I don't know, I guess maybe it's the new DLC for it, or maybe yeah. I'm just at the right time in my life to enjoy the game. But I have gotten wildly deep into Binding of Isaac Repentance. And maybe you can comment, like, I know the DLC added more stuff, but it also, like, balanced a bunch of shit,
yeah,
right?
So first of all, I want to say, like, I've never been more overjoyed that someone yeah. finally is playing this game because I've been obsessed with this game for 10 years at this point. Maybe it's 20, knowing how little I know what time is. But, right. One of the things, I think part of the reason that you've been able to get into it is when Repentance came out, which is the newest DLC, but you can also buy it as like a full pack of all the games together if you've never played it. They basically rebalanced the onboarding systems. So previously yes. it was like a lot more punishing to sort of get familiar with the systems and how the game works. And they rebalanced it to make it more welcoming. They also added like stuff like true co-op. So you can play with someone else, that makes the game much easier if you want to just like learn the systems. But it just came out. It came out on PC earlier this year, and now it's on consoles as well, Switch and Xbox and PlayStation. Man, Griffin, I'm very curious, like, what is it about Binding of Isaac that sort of clicks for you as a game? And maybe just like briefly describe like
yeah,
what the game is.
I mean, it is a rogue. It's mostly a roguelite, but you do like by completing certain like challenges, you unlock new items that show up in the pool, which is a very like limited way of kind of continuing the progression. Also, like there are certain like checkpoints that when you like pass them, like you defeat the final boss enough times, the game changes. And the paths that are available to you change.
Yeah.
The characters that are available to you change.
Just for people that don't understand the game at all, just to be clear, it's a top-down action, like a Smash TV or like a Zelda, but with like randomized RPG mechanics layered on top of
yes.
that. So the game constantly changes. Your character gets different abilities depending on the random items that you get throughout the game.
Right. So like, I don't know. Whenever I played this game in the past, I would just play it and get some random shit. And then maybe I'd beat the boss. Maybe I didn't. I never really noticed any change or anything like that. But, maybe it's the rebalancing. Maybe it's the fact that Russ pointed me towards an app on the phone that you have that you can turn on your camera and like point it at any item in the game. And it'll tell you like what it is and what it does, because a lot of the items are pretty opaque. But I don't even use that as much anymore because I've learned like what stuff I like, what stuff to avoid.
Yeah.
And I've learned how to like use the characters better. I've learned a lot of the boss strategies, and now I can, you know, finish a run like most of the time, which is super rewarding. There's a bunch of different challenges that have like special rules or like special builds that you have to play as that are really like super novel and fun. And I'm like making headway into it. I still have so far to go, right? Like there's still so many like levels I haven't 10%. Reached. Okay. Right, exactly. But I don't know. I'm having a blast with it. I can't put it down.
The thing for me that I find just super interesting about this is Binding of Isaac appears to be an action game. Like when you first pick it up, it looks like an action game. It's really like almost a strategy / puzzle game with like a little bit of card game stuff thrown in to the point where you're trying to like stay, what is the term, pace when you're playing like a Hearthstone or something? Tempo?
Oh yeah, tempo, yeah.
You're trying to stay ahead of the tempo. So you're trying to maximize every piece of resource that you have that you pick up. So for example, if you get a key and you have 5 coins, and you walk into a room and there's 2 locked doors, you should always go to the shop instead of the item door because the shop will have more keys to buy and also more options. And it like opens options up for you. And your brain sort of gets to this point where you're seeing the matrix a little bit, where you understand, oh, if I do this and this and this, I will get more resources than I would if I did it in a different order.
Yeah.
And that part of it like scratches a very specific ADD part of my brain that I have a very tough time explaining to people, but I'm glad someone else is enjoying it.
No, yeah, it's like there are, I just played through a run that I finished and had a very like slow offensive build, which is great for destroying bosses, but like I kept taking so much damage anytime I went into a room with like a bunch of enemies in it. And so I started to hunt down these card pickups that are like one-time use items, and one of them lets you jump straight to the boss, which I would never do otherwise because you're skipping like a whole floor's worth of upgrades. But that was the strategy that worked for me for that run. It is fantastic. I would encourage anybody who, I think the DLC is like $20, so it's not something to scoff at. But it's, I don't know, it finally made the game click for me, and now I feel like I have, like Russ said, like a decade's worth of this enormous fucking game to dive into now.
Yeah, my play clock is probably around 400 hours of that game, to give you an idea, and I'm nowhere near finishing the DLC.
One last thing also, I downloaded the Minecraft Magic Kingdom pack.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my God. How did I not talk about
that? Did you play it?
Shh. Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah, I mostly downloaded it to play with Henry because he's been to Magic Kingdom a few times, and it's fucking bonkers.
It's staggering. Do you guys know about this?
Yes, I've heard about it. I haven't tried it.
It's staggering. Honestly, like, Russ, have you been to Walt Disney World?
Yeah, it's been probably 15 years.
Okay, so I'm a little bit of a Disney.
I'm aware.
Yeah?
Okay, you don't need to get into it. So this thing is, they have rebuilt, to celebrate the 50th anniversary of 50 Years of Magic, for the anniversary of Walt's incredible dream, Walt Disney World, like, in partnership with Minecraft, released a fully realized version of the Magic Kingdom in the game.
Is that Disney World or is that something else?
That's Disney. It's one of the parks at Disney World.
Magic Kingdom is one of the parks at Disney World, right. So Magic Kingdom was the first one before.
It's like Tomorrowland.
Tomorrowland. Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's basically like a condensed like Disneyland. Like most of Disneyland's features are Magic Kingdom.
Disneyland's like an expanded Magic Kingdom. Like Disneyland has
it, in the heads of a casual Disney fan.
Yeah.
The Magic Kingdom is most similar to Disneyland, but it's actually way more complicated, and we will not go into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, if you guys want to do a new podcast about Disney, let me know. God, Russ, Jesus, we get it. You love Universal Studios. But this is like the Magic Kingdom. It's the whole thing. And as somebody who's like kind of a fanatic about this stuff, like it was really wild going into like, not just like, there are many rides that you can like ride. You can ride them, right? You can get onto Haunted Mansion and it's like there with
one,
the narration
one to one.
Of Haunted Mansion.
It's you can go into the fucking Enchanted Tiki Room and they will do this song with all the birds and stuff. It's
The stretching room is in the Haunted Mansion, like, which doesn't mean anything if you're not kind of a somebody who's been a lot, but like the No, see, that's the thing about it. It was an elevator at Disneyland because they needed to make the ride subterranean, but the effect was so good that at Disney World the ceiling goes up.
Wow.
And you're not actually going down because you're staying on. Okay, but like restaurants, right? I went to like my favorite restaurants and could find the bathroom.
Wow.
Like that is the level of detail. Like, not a joke. Like, I went to the table at Skipper Canteen that I like ate at last time. It is a wild, it's
unfathomable. This is a serious question. If you dig down, can you access like the tunnels that go beneath the park?
No.
The utilidors? No, I don't think it goes that low. I don't know if there's a way to like interact with it in a way outside of what they designed, right? Like, can you put it into some sort of build mode and mess it up?
Yes, you can.
It is.
You can you can also like collect autographs. Like, they have like all the Disney characters all around the park that you can go get their autographs, which was similar to that.
Even some that I mean aren't in the Magic Kingdom.
Oh, okay,
I mean, you're not going to see it on.
No,
Elsa.
That's ridiculous.
I mean,
is it available on all platforms? Like, can I have you play this on Switch? Yeah. Or? Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just part of the.
You could have all of Disney World on your Switch.
That's how I've been playing it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it is the amount of work that went into it. Like, I'm not used to under Chapek's leadership, project that getting this amount of TLC. And to see this kind of work going into it is really phenomenal. It's a real labor of love, it must be, because I know they're not laying out the cash.
It's actually surprising that more brands have not done this, like paid like builders, Minecraft builders, to just like make Game of Thrones land or something
like
have.
That. They have. It's not. I mean, it's not uncommon for there to be like Minecraft mods that are sponsored by, you know, like Virgin Galactic or whatever. It's just. I think what's interesting here is it is an actual partnership with Microsoft, and it is like of this scale.
Yeah.
It's just.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's not 1-to-1 because it's made of cubes, but like.
And Elsa's there.
By 1-to-1, I mean like.
And Elsa's there, yes.
I don't know what Elsa's at the park, aren't they?
Where would Elsa be at the park?
Did you even think about it before you asked that question?
You're right.
Anna's meet and greet with Elsa is over in the
Noid Pavilion
of
course,
Epcot. The World Showcase.
Well, but. Oh my God. You're right. I'm so sorry, everybody.
Yeah, but where's the GAC fall on you?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ, Russ.
Ba-da-da.
You're embarrassed. Hey, Russ. You're embarrassing yourself. You've been embarrassed.
I'm sorry.
Okay, I have one other honorable mention that I want to make. I want to share two podcasts and also like a story from the things that I listen to in my free time. I enjoy listening to football podcasts, and I swear this is going somewhere, so please. So the sad part about this is I listen to two shows. I listen to this show called Time's Ours, which is a Kansas City Chiefs podcast. And I listen to a show that is now called You Pod to Win the Game, which was Yahoo Sports' football podcast. And that second one, You Pod to Win the Game, right after the Super Bowl this year, one of the co-hosts unexpectedly passed away, Therese Paylor, who was like kind of was a huge presence in Kansas City Chiefs football culture. And his co-host Charles Robinson has continued to host that show, kind of reviving it this season. And then the other one, The Time's Ours, the Chiefs, very specifically Chiefs podcast, a listener of the show, Josh Briscoe, had a pretty awful health scare right in the middle of the season. So in the course of a year, it was a lot for, parasocial relationships, frankly, that I have with these two shows. And they both have continued, and they both just mean like the absolute world to me. They are I'm sure there are some people listening to this show who have that feeling of, you know, it's what you listen to when you want to feel good, when you're on a walk and you've had a hard day. So I just want to shout both those out. I understand Time's Ours, the Chiefs one, is a very narrow part of our potential audience. But if you do like football, I think you might like either of those.
Cool. I wanted to, speaking of thank you, thank the following people for writing reviews for the besties. Raul R. Garda Barranco, Dane Girl, Tadro Chester, Biddy Alec, and Quasimandius. Thank you very much for writing reviews. Thank you to everyone else who has written reviews about the Besties on Apple Podcasts. Love to see them. They're great. Super helpful.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to make this fast. Games that we talked about. We talked about Pokemon Diamond and Pearl and their modern remakes. We talked about a bunch of Pokemon games, new Pokemon Snap, Pokemon Unite, Pokken Tournament, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee, Sword and Shield, Cafe Remix. We also had a nice, long, extended chunk of honorable mentions that included Forza Horizon 5, Unsighted, Pony Island, which is another game by the creator of Inscription, Halo Infinite, Binding of Isaac, Repentance, that Minecraft Disney Magic Kingdom expansion.
It's $7, by the way.
What?
I don't know if we mentioned that. $7.
$7.
It's $7.
Oh, thank you. Minecraft thing. I was worried that...
If you're curious about like what is something like that run you? I mean, you pay $100 to get in the park on an off day, or you can pay $7 in Minecraft.
That's a great point. I also mentioned Times Hours and Epod to win the game. We also shared a lot of Game Pass and video game books and other recommendations for that stuff. Just barring us repeating the entire show, I will let you go back to that chunk with the rewind button. But I hope that this helped out.
Hey, that's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening. We certainly appreciate you. And some configuration of us will be here with you next week to talk about Games of the Fall and hidden gems you might have missed. But until that time, thank you, as always, for joining us for the Besties. But be sure to join us again next week for the Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Besties.
Besties!